So let's get this underway. Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks very much for coming along to this talk. I'm Andy Wigley. I live in the UK. I'm resident in the UK. I actually work for a group that's based in Redmond, which is nice because it means I have quiet mornings and get things done before my colleagues come into work sometime in the middle of the afternoon. So my job is I'm responsible for developer training, sort of production content for Windows. So I'm responsible for doing MVAs and some conference presentations and some workshops, and there's a whole bunch of hands-on labs we've just been building. So I get to get very deep in with all of the UWP and the Windows 10 dev platform, which is really interesting. I'd encourage you to please, if you've got any questions, contact me on email or on Twitter. There's my handle and email address there. So Mike asked me to do in this talk is what is the universal Windows platform? So clearly we haven't got very long for talking about such a big subject. So what I would hopefully do with this is to have you go away from this. Think if you've been wondering about the UWP and whether you should be starting to think about using it for building apps, I hope at the end of this you might be ready to consider it and think that actually, yes, this platform is big enough and it is rich enough for me to build all my apps, whether they're not just kind of commercial public store ones, but also your enterprise line of business apps. Because it's a huge platform and we are investing heavily in it and building more and more functionality into it all the time. So just a quick sort of history about where we got to where we are today. Actually, let's go even further back. The 1990s, when we kind of the Win32 API came out, Windows 95, Windows NT, and all that sort of thing. And in those days, we were building with Visual C++ and Visual Basic, and there were frameworks. The Win32 is a flat, sequential API set. But then there were frameworks like MFC that gave an object-oriented model for interacting with Win32. And over the years, with newer things came along. 2002, the .NET Framework version 1 came out, and there's been various versions of that over the years. And also, you look at across our products, we had Big Windows, and then we had Pocket PCs and Windows Mobile, where we had the .NET Compact Framework, which is where I made my living, where my focus was for all of the noughties, really. And then we get finally up to here, and if you look at Windows Phone 7 there, the underlying operating system on Windows Phone 7 was actually, well, we called it the Windows Phone OS, but it was a derivative of Windows CE, a small, compact operating system, which is brilliant for handheld battery devices. It's ideal for phones and that sort of thing. But, of course, it was a bit different from what we had on Big Windows. And the way we had the .NET Compact Framework and we had the full .NET Framework, and they were close, but there was enough difficult differences there to make developing across these different platforms problematic. So we've been fixing this problem and creating a new opportunity for developers for a very long time. And if you look at, by the time we got to Windows Phone 8, at that point what we did was we ripped out Windows CE underneath and replaced it with a new kernel, which was the Windows NT kernel. So what we did there was we converged at the OS level, the low levels, we converged our platforms. We did the same with Xbox One. So we didn't actually change much from the developer programming point of view at that point, but what we were doing was fixing the foundations, putting the same underlying operating system in there, which is what we needed to do to then build on and create to get to where we are today. And Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1, that's where we actually for the first time gave a converged developer model. Now Windows 8, when it first came out, obviously the big emphasis on Windows 8 was about embracing touch and modern apps. And we brought a new API set out called the Windows Runtime. And the Windows Runtime actually is the heart of the universal Windows platform, massively expanded now in Windows 10. And we're now finally reaping the benefit of all this work we've been doing, converging all our platforms. So you get to Windows 10, and we've brought everything together. We've got one developer platform across Xbox One, coming soon, Windows 10 on desktop, Windows 10 on mobile, or phones and small tablets, and even Windows on devices. And those of you who are in the sessions earlier in this track saw a brilliant session from Mike Talty where he was doing great things with Raspberry Pi, little $35 embedded computers running UWP apps. So all of these run on Linux. And so we've got this big family of Windows 10 devices, and all of these are running the UWP, or you build apps against the UWP. So we got the Raspberry Pi on the left there, and the Minnow board, and there's another one as well. And then we've obviously got phones and tablets, convertibles, and all-in-ones. There's the Xbox in there, of course, and even really innovative hardware like the HoloLens. And the Surface Hub, the big screens, and then over on there, the living room with the Xbox screen. And all of these are running the same developer platform. So what does it mean for you building apps to run on Windows 10? So we've got our operating system. And first of all, we've still got, and we still love, support for what we call our classic Windows apps. And these are built on maybe on the full .NET framework, or MFC and C++, WPF and WinForms. And these are still very valuable and very great technologies for building apps. But, of course, the apps you build with those technologies run very much only on desktop machines. But we've gotten this new platform now with Windows 10, the Universal Windows Platform. That's set as the heart of it. We have the Windows Runtime APIs. These are the ones that always, the namespaces for all the Windows Runtime APIs, all begin with Windows dot. And next to it, we've got a subset of .NET Core, which all of these are the system.APIs. So together, they give a great experience for managed code developers, and a very sort of familiar one if you've been building on earlier versions of Windows. And the Windows Runtime is very interesting because it's written in C++, and it's a pure object-oriented API, so it's another alternative, if you like, to Win32. But the interesting thing about Windows Runtime, any objects in that API set are exposed, can be projected out, so that they are callable from C# and VB, so managed code languages, from C++, and also from JavaScript. So this gives us now, we've got sort of distinct kind of ways of building native apps on the UWP. You could use XAML as your technology for doing the UI, and you can build your logic underneath your XAML in C# and VB, or you can build it in C++. And both of those, of course, can call down into the Windows runtime, and the C# VB can call into the .NET libraries as well. Or you could use, if HTML and JavaScript are your preferred tools of the trade, then you could build full Windows native apps, Windows 10 UWP apps, using HTML and JavaScript. And again, you've got full access to all the Windows Runtime APIs underneath. And then if you're gaming is your thing, we've got DirectX in there. Although, obviously, most gaming developers will use some kind of middleware package in order to create games. And a lot of them are portable across lots of different operating systems as well. So we've got all those. These are the primary ways of building apps on the UWP. We've also got some bridging technologies where we are embracing other skill sets and other ways of building apps that will run on Windows 10. The two we've got out at the moment you can use already are hosted web apps, which is a really interesting way of taking your website, which you could use, that could be written in, you know, PHP or whatever your technology is. And you create a small package, which is basically a manifest pointing at that website. That can be deployed to the store, which makes it run as if it's a store app, and it runs in a window just the same as any other native app. But all your code stays on the web server, and you can just update it on there. But the JavaScript, yet again, can call directly into Windows Runtime API, so you can do exciting things like toast notifications and tiles and all the other interesting things you can do from the UWP that interact with the Windows platform. And we've got the Objective-C. We've open sourced that. That's out there on GitHub, and we're encouraging contributions from the community, where you can take your Objective-C code, you can compile that in Visual Studio, and use that in a UWP app. And we're working on some other bridges as well. So this UWP, the guaranteed thing about it is, it's a single guaranteed API service that is available across all of our Windows 10 devices. And we're just showing three there, desktop, phone, and Xbox. So at the heart of it is this Windows runtime, which has grown a huge amount since 8. So it started, its genesis was Windows 8, Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1, when we unified those platforms, added quite a bit more. But by the time we get to Windows 10, we've massively expanded it with a whole load of new features, adding printing support on mobile, there's DirectX 12, loads of great stuff about the Action Center, voiceover in IP, and there's inking support, drag and drop, Cortana, all these kind of great features that have been added into the platform. And really what this is doing, and the way that Windows 10 also has kind of embrace the best of Windows 7, if you like, and the best of 8, so it gives a good experience whether you're using a mouse or keyboard or touch. In the same way, the UWP, the platform, has expanded to support all of those different scenarios. So if you were thinking that these modern apps was just about touch friend, just, you know, tablet apps, no, you need to think again, because it's very much available with a rich functionality to support all of the ways that people interact with computers and all the scenarios that you want to support. So there are a whole bunch of APIs in there for covering all of the sort of things that you might want to do. A great mapping platform, rich sensors and tiles and app-to-app communication, inking, and all these kind of great stuff. And as Mike said earlier in his session, I'm now going to run through every single one of those. So let's start with an accelerometer. Okay. No, I'm not going to do that. So instead, we haven't got time, obviously, to give you the broad brush of everything that's in there. So what I want to do, actually, is to drill down into a couple of areas that I find the most interesting and exciting in the Universal Windows platform. And part of that is kind of saying also a little bit about how it works and why it was designed the way that it was. And it's very much designed for performance. It's about making really great apps that are really pleasant to use, that you don't get lag, that respond well to users, that will run on low-powered hardware as well as they'll run on high-powered hardware. So we're running it on a broad range of devices, right from low-powered phones and Raspberry Pis all the way up to, you know, the latest Surface Book super PCs. And part of the way that has happened is that when they were designing the Windows runtime, the API surface, they obviously looked at all of everything that was before, basically .NET framework and Win32 and all this kind of stuff. And they were looking at the API surface, and they looked at every operation that they were exposing, every method that had the potential to take more than 50 milliseconds to complete. They enforced that was only available through an asynchronous API. So this asynchrony, it takes advantage of, you know, multi-core CPUs and multi-threading capabilities and different execution context. But the key thing about async is that, the .NET framework brought this in as well with 4.6, so it has a bunch of async methods, but the old synchronous ones are still there. You won't find the synchronous alternatives in the Windows runtime. They're not there. You can't use them. And the reason why we stop people from using them is the thinking behind this is that any long-running operations, like file access, like network calls, all this kind of stuff that could take a little while, we don't want to allow the developer to inadvertently block the UI thread. So block the, you know, this sort of thing when you're trying to use touch on a screen and it suddenly stutters and it's not responding. We're trying to drive all that kind of thing out of the platform. And part of that is this asynchronous thing. So if you look at this little code snippet here, it's a very few lines of code, and what it does is it opens a particular file, the file name is passed into this method, and it reads all the text out of a file. And the interesting thing about it is the first line just gets a reference to the local folder, which is the local storage in the sandbox where your app runs. And then the next line says await, it returns a storage file, and it says await fold.getFileAsync. Now, all async methods by convention have async at the end of the name. If you're writing your own libraries, you should follow that convention. And that getFileAsync, so what the compiler, C# compiler does, whenever you call an awaitable method with the await keyword, you have to mark the method with the async keyword. And what the C# compiler does when it gets to a method like this is it actually compiles this method as a quite complicated state engine. So what actually happens when it gets to that fold get file async is that The actual execution of that get file async is palmed off to some other context, and it happens in the background. And this method, at this point, the state engine kicks in. It saves all the local variables in this method, and then it just suspends. And it returns to the caller. The caller quite often will be the UI thread that's also driving the UI and the bits that the user is using touch to scroll lists and all this kind of stuff. So while this get file async operation is going on, your UI can still carry on. Your user's not getting blocked by anything. And then when this get file async method has completed and it's returned the reference to the file, then this state engine will kick in again, and this method will resume just where it left off, back in its original context. And it will just reload into the local variables and then carry on just as if it has never been away. And then the very next line has another awaitable, fileio.readTextAsync, and the whole process will go off again. Except this time it will go off into the background and we'll read all that text. So it's non-blocking, and it's super, super, and you'll see this pattern over and over with any of the Windows Runtime APIs. Now, another interesting thing about this is a change from Windows 8. So the UWP, yes, it is the next generation of what we had with Windows 8 and Windows Store. But one thing that's definitely new is this thing, two things. First of all, .NET, how .NET is available for these modern apps. So the full .NET framework obviously has the full shooting match and has ASP.NET and all this kind of stuff in it. And that's available on Windows Server and for classical Windows apps. But for these modern apps, we have a subset of the libraries that are only applicable to running these kind of modern apps. And it's called .NET Core, and it's been refactored and actually shipped as it's been refactored into separate different little libraries. So you don't have the whole base class library as a complete entity. You have it all divided up into little bits. And that's actually, you add references to that in your app as separate NuGet packages. And this is interesting for a couple of things. First of all, it means that different packages can be updated out of band. And you'll see this over and over as well. The speed of change with this system is very much faster than we had in the past. So if there's a bug fix in some library to do with collections, we can ship out of band a new version of this through NuGet, and your app could reference this and get around a particular bug that you were encountering before that was in the libraries. And these ship app local with your app, so anybody who installs your app would get that obviously updated version of the package. So that's one bit of it. But the real bit, the performance gain, is this thing called .NET Native. So .NET Native, so when you compile a release build and you upload it to the store for distribution, you actually are building a Microsoft Intermediate Language tokenized build, the same as we used to. But what actually happens then up in the cloud is it gets compiled to using our latest compilers, which we released some new C++ compilers a couple of years ago. And we're getting the real advantages of this in here as well. And what this .NET Native compilation process does is it compiles, it actually statically compiles your app into native code up in the cloud for different architectures. So when somebody downloads your app, they're getting pure executable code. So all the just-in-time compilation that we used to have with managed code languages is gone. You're still programming with those languages, so you've got all that convenience and that the ease of programming and that sort of thing, but you're getting native C++ performance actually when it's running. And the performance enhancements that you can see are pretty spectacular. Apps in the benchmarking they've done, apps can start up to 60% faster than they used to and have a much smaller memory footprint. And the other good advantage of having this compiler in the cloud is that we're still sort of enhancing it and improving and adding features. And because we own the compiler in the cloud, it means that your app could get recompiled in the cloud to take advantage of some improvements that we've brought into the compiler without you actually having to resubmit your app. So just users who download your app thereafter will just get the benefits of that. So these things together, it's all part of the whole package of making these things super fast and super slick. The other thing about the performance is just talk about the app lifecycle. So, you know, this is the way these apps work is drawn on the smartphone app model, essentially. So what that means is while your user is actually using an app and interacting with it and is clicking on things and swiping lists and that sort of thing. Obviously, it's got full access to the machine and it's running at full speed and the user has a great experience. But as soon as the user on a phone switches to another app or minimizes your app on the desktop down to the taskbar or something, then your app gets suspended, which means the system takes a snapshot of its working memory, but then it's just sitting there, it's not using any resources. So it can be very rapidly resumed if the user goes back to your app and clicks on it and re-inflates it from the taskbar. So it's very quick to resume. But it's sitting there and it's not using any resources when the user's not interacting with it. So this is very important for this modern age where we are talking about a mobile-first, cloud-first world. So mobile-first, increasingly our computing devices are not plugged in. They are portable and we're taking them with us and increasingly we're using them. And this used to be phones only and now, of course, it's expanding out to tablets and increasingly, you know, the latest Surface Books quoted with their 11 hours or so plus of battery life. Being able to run on batteries is an increasingly important thing and a part of the mobile world that we all live in. And having the apps that are working with that goal, those goals of not burning battery when they shouldn't do, and is a very, very important part of creating modern apps that are going to give a good user experience. Now, of course, we've also got this background task. So this idea of having things that the app is only active when the user is interacting with them is a very laudable one, but a lot of apps, line of business apps and this sort of thing, that's a pretty much of a big restriction and has been a reason for people not wanting to adopt the modern app framework in the past. But we have got more and more ways of getting stuff to run in the background. And I want to look at a few of those sort of now to sort of illustrate this. So we've got many, many ways to run code in the background. First of all, we've got all these background triggers. So you can create a bit of code which doesn't have any UI that's associated with your app that can be triggered by some kind of an event. And that could be a time trigger, so just every 15 minutes you run this background task. And it could be a push notification trigger. So from the cloud, your back end sends a push notification through and it causes your background task to run. The phone 8.1 ones were added to the ones that you see in red there when phone 8.1, and that adds a bunch of ones that are around about GAT and RFCOM, our Bluetooth device kind of connection things. And then with UWP, Windows 10, we've added all the ones in blue on the right. And all kinds of interesting ones, activity sensor, toast notification, application trigger, all these kind of ones are different ways of having your background tasks get triggered and run for a period to do stuff, even when the user isn't actually interacting with the app. And there's other ways that your app can run in the background. Just to pick on three of them, app services, which are a bit like web services, interactive toasts, which are the next generation of notifications, and speech through Cortana. To drill in a little bit more detail on those, this is really interesting. So app services, and I don't think it's had enough kind of notice taken of it yet. But the idea here is that your background task, which normally is associated only with the app, is actually callable from other client apps. So it's just a simple message exchange protocol across between the client app and the background task. But this is going to be particularly interesting for enterprises, for example, where they want to have a suite of apps that coordinate things between them. And you can create an app service that does some specific task, and then other client apps can then call that app service for it to do something for it. It might be sort of some cached data off a back-end service or do some sensor work or yeah, pull some stuff from a web service, whatever you want it to be. So they're really interesting. And then interactive toasts is really exciting as well. So on the left there, we've got the kind of the boring old school toast, if you like, which is just it comes up in a window. It's got some data on it. You read it, it disappears. They are chaseable, so if you tap on the toast, it will launch the app. But that was all we had before. Pretty boring. But now we've got the... So if you haven't figured out, the top line is the what it looks like on desktop, and the bottom is what it looks like on a phone. So the middle column there, now a toast notification can actually have some UI in it. So an example of a messenger toast, you can now, instead of having to, if you want to reply to that, having to tap on the toast or open the messenger app, you can just type your response straight into the notification window and hit send and it will work. Likewise, on the right, you can actually have buttons on it, and you can have drop-down lists and this sort of thing. So you can have some limited UI to interact directly with the user straight from the toast. So this is an example of how in Windows 10 we're making it easier to interact with apps. So the magic, how does this happen? Well, it invokes a background task, which is of your app, in order to actually complete that bit of functionality. We also got Cortana, which is exciting as well. So you can use Cortana as well to complete tasks through speech. So there are APIs for workflow, UI templates, and speech. So this is an example of a Cortana pane where we've got an app icon, you've got a bit of text, you've got a content area where you can put images and data, and all of this is coming from another background task for your app. But the UI for the way that your user is interacting with that is directly through Cortana. So it just avoids all this context switching, jumping backwards and forwards from one app to another. So, let's go and actually, that's enough talking. So let's switch over and let's talk about, show a demo. So, the golden rule of presenting is always turn notifications off. However, this demo is all about notifications, so notifications are on. The first of all, I wanted to show you this this application. So this is a one I've used in my Channel 9 video training series. Well, it's a new version of it, which has added some extra stuff. And it's a simple to-do app, but it's got a lot of interesting stuff built into it. So just need to build that and run it up on my system. And I've also got, in as part of this project, I've got a notifier app, which, it's a part of this architecture. I've got the to-do app, which is taking an age to build. Come on, thank you. And then I've also got, up in the cloud in Azure, I've got a Azure Notification Hub. So this is registering with the cloud, and it's talking to the Azure Notification Hub, this app. This is my picture to-do. It's a very nice, graphically rich... Actually, it's terrible UI, so I apologize for that. But it's a nice adaptive... It's an adaptive UI. So Laurent, who, if you were in the session immediately before, was talking about creating an adaptive UI. So this app works great on a phone sort of size screen, and then it expands out on here, so you get this nice inline editing thing. It would be really immature, yes, so thank you. Do you know what? As soon as I said that, I thought some smart aleck in here is going to start. Yeah. All right, lay off. You tweet in a few minutes, all right? yes, thank you. Oh, dear. Right, Scott, where are you? So and actually it has some interesting things. So you can attach photos to it and all this kind of stuff. Like we can put a picture on it and this sort of thing, and it's quite nice. But so, and I can add a new one on here. Remember to thank these wonderful people. Oh, I'm so, that's it, so terrible. Right, begging for support here. There we go. And he just gives it a colour. So that's the basics of it, and we're going to be working with this a bit more. So now I've also got this this other app. I can close it now. This other app here, which is this notifier, which is... All this is a pretending to be my cloud backend. Let's just make sure you can see what's going on. This is sending some data up to the cloud, which is the XML for a toast notification. So it's sending up to my notification hub, and it's going to come into my machine as a notification. The first one I'm going to send actually is a very boring... This is the traditional toast. You can send this one, and this will pop up. There we go. This is a toast, and it's chaseable, so I can click on it, and it will launch the app. But that's kind of all we had up to now, which is pretty boring, really. But we can do much better than that. So the next one is the reminder type. So this has it's a toast activation type of background, but the important thing is it has this system commands on it, snooze and dismiss. So this is going to put traditional reminder stuff onto it, and the system will just take care of managing that. But it's also got another action on here called set completed. So let's send that one. And there you see we've got this richer UI. It's just a typical reminder. I've got another one on there, but I'm not going to do that one. I want to use the next one, which is a slight variant of that, which is a to-do item due. And I'll send that one, which is another variant on this. And even this is richer. It's even got picture. It's a reminder for one of my items. And if I hit the edit item, it's going to launch the app, but in a specific context. So it goes straight to the item that we're particularly interested in. And if I send that one again, and this time when it comes up, did it do it? Oh, here we go. Set completed. Set completed. And then let's just launch the app. Oh, it's gone. I lost my tile. Right, well, let's just send the boring one as a way of launching it. When we launch it, of course, the item has been completed. So that all happened in the background. So all this magic is just very simple to implement this kind of functionality, but it just allows the user to interact directly with the toast rather than having to launch the app every time. The way that you implement that sort of thing is that this application has, if I go to the manifest, a bunch of declarations. It's difficult in this screen resolution. It has a bunch of declarations. So it has a couple of background tasks associated with it. There's a push notification one. That's actually one I didn't show you, which updates the badge count. And this one is a background task that is a system type and invokes this thing called notificationTask.notificationTask. That is in a class library, which is this background task, notificationTask.notificationTask, which is the notification task namespace, and the class itself is called notificationTask. And like every background task, it implements an interface called iBackgroundTask. And in that interface just requires that this method be present. And so this is where your logic goes. And that complete one, the one I just did, hit that complete button, all it is doing is executing this little bit of code, which gets me a to-do item repository object, which is an object I've written to talk to my file repository. It gets the current value of the to-do item with that item ID, sets it is complete flag to true, and then updates it back in the file, stores it back again in the file. So a little bit of functionality there. There's no UI involved, but we were able to invoke that and run it directly from that notification. So that's first thing about doing stuff in the background. There's my thing gone. Here we go. And there's other ways as well. And I want to sort of extend this out a little bit as well. And one of the things that's really exciting for me about UWP and Windows 10 is how, and also the energy that's in Microsoft at the moment in really driving this creation of really exciting things like the HoloLens and this sort of thing. But even without sort of science fiction stuff like the HoloLens, even with Windows 10, there's really great support for other kinds of interaction methods. We're kind of getting away from, you know, keyboards and mouse, that's so, you know, we've been using them for how long, how many decades? You know, we can do better than that, you know? Yeah, they're valuable ways of interacting with computers, but there are much more natural ways of interacting with computers. And over the next sort of coming years, you're going to see more and more computers turning up in situations where you are interacting with them, and maybe not even, you know, it's not like a keyboard or a mouse, but other ways through speech or touch and written input. So this is what we call more personal computing. And Windows 10 is really pushing forward, and we're really driving hard. And with the UWP, we've got loads of capabilities in there that allow you to reimagine how users can interact with your apps. And the first one, of course, is speech. And it really is quite easy to add speech recognition and synthesis. How many of you were in Mike Torti's session, first session this afternoon? Great. Okay, so you saw him using speech to change the colour on a Sphero ball. And he showed there's a few lines of code to do that. So speech recognition and synthesis is really quite simple. And you can do that in-app, so you don't need Cortana for that. But obviously the kind of signature experience is Cortana, which is... And actually, how many of you are running Windows 10? Okay, and how many of you actually ask Cortana things? Yeah, I've kind of expected that. A few, you know. It's weird, isn't it? It's a bit weird, really. I'm not so used to it. But to be honest, if I need to find out some information, I'll tend to use Cortana now, because it's so much quicker than typing it in. And I'm a pretty bad typist, to be honest. So. Just hit the thing and say, or say, hey, Cortana. Well, I mustn't do that. Anyway, it's quicker. It's just quicker. And the speech recognition is really easy. So once you get over the kind of awkwardness of it, it really is a nice way of getting it to do lookups for you. And we can also use Cortana to integrate with a background task of our app as well. So I've got an example of that. So in actual fact, this app has some interesting things. The one that you'll see it's not running at the moment, my to-do sample, but I can say something like, hey Cortana, add arrange dinner with Mike to my to-do. Yes. Can we turn up the volume on with the PC? It's actually added it to my list, and there's actually a link on here. So I can open my app and arrange dinner with Mike has been added, just entirely through speech commands. I can do, hey Cortana, what's on my to-do? Thank you, Mike. And then it gives the list, and this is talking through Cortana. Cheers, mate. it's talking directly to it. You should actually hear her speak back, but we've got it plugged in here, but you're not hearing the audio. So she does actually speak back to you as well, which is going to make the next demo slightly challenging. So, interesting. Let me just check where we are playing back to. Sorry? Yeah, it's that one, yeah. It'll be all right. I'll put my microphone down here and see. She may just be sulking. Right. Okay, so that's some stuff that's built into that, but I've got another sample which is kind of interesting. And this one is an application. I'm going to run it locally on my machine first. And this is an app called Best Friend. It's actually written by my colleague Nikolai Medulev of my team. And it's written for people who don't have any friends. I mean, we love to embrace everybody in our community. And this is one specifically for people who don't have friends. So it actually, this app talks to, out on the web, there are bots that you can chat to, and there's a serious thing to this. You know the Turing test, the way you can have a conversation with a computer, and the idea is that you're meant to not know it's a computer. Well, frankly, these bots fall far short of ever competing for winning the Turing test. But you should, if I say, start listening. Right. How are you today? And then she actually says, normally, Fantabula Rosa, and how are you? Oh, gosh, she's listening to me again. You just got paid. That's great. You just got paid. Awesome. Oh. Yeah, I'm fine. What is your favorite food? Okay, stop stop listening. So, in a minute, she should just come up and say, are you sure you want me to stop? Yes. Now, this demo, actually, normally she speaks back at you, so it's lacking somewhat. Oh, actually, okay. Now, if you listen, she's...
Maybe.
You like cheese?
I'm just being me. Be on. Trying not to.
So, as you can see, this can get very surreal and really strange very quickly. Now, the actual logic to implement this kind of thing is not very complicated. It's all in mainpage.xaml in this particular thing. Just to kind of give you a flavour of it, if we go to the onNavigated2 where the page loads, there's a bit of setup stuff, but then the important thing is this init continuous recognition method. So we go to the definition of that. And this is where it sets up a speech recognizer, continuous. And Mike has something very similar in his demo, where you can add a constraint. So it's actually continuously listening, but for a specific phrase of start listening, which is what it was prompting us for. And then when it does actually get that phrase, then this result generated method will execute. And then we go into the main set listening loop of this, which at the heart of it has a couple of methods, which is the listen for text one. This is where it's listening to what I'm saying, and again it uses a speech recognizer, recognize async, it gets the text out of it, it sends it off over the internet to the bot, and then the bot will come back and will use the speech synthesizer to talk it back to you. So it's really not terribly complicated stuff. Now, that's kind of interesting, that's in-app speech recognition and synthesis, but the commands thing that I was doing before when I was talking to the to-do app is all driven by this file, a special file called a VCD, a voice command definition. So this one has a bunch of commands that have been registered. You have to run the app once and these commands get registered. And as you can see there, here's a command called start chat. So if I say, hey Cortana, best friend, I want to talk. And then it launches the app.
What have you been up to lately?
I'm speaking to a crowd of very wonderful people here at Future Decoded.
You're speaking to a crowd is very wonderful people here, if I could take a minute. You hardly know me.
Yeah, right. Okay. But it's rich, and look, there's other ones in here as well. You can actually pass in, here's the listen for is what it's actually listening for. So here's a command that must ask with can I ask, but then there's a thing called message. A message is defined as natural language. It basically means anything. So we can say, hey Cortana, best friend, can I ask, how are you? Really? Yes.
She's getting. I've seen them.
All right. Enough.
They light up like
okay. So you can have hours of fun with this. There's other ones as well which don't. Those all launch the app, and they have this navigate tag in them, which means launch the app. But the other variants in here have a voice command service, and these ones. Let's look at this one. You know. Hey Cortana, I want to go to London, best friend.
Here you go, best friend, it's London.
Now here, the app hasn't launched at all, but it's still talking to a background service of my app. And the logic for that is, again, in another one of these background services, another one of these guys that implements this actually implements a variant of iBackground Task, which is a XAML rendering background task, because this is doing a little bit of UI as well. But the way that this communicates with Cortana is using this voice command service connection, And it has voice commands, and it's looking for the command where, which was the keyword for that I want to go to London thing. And then it can do stuff like get image files and get files out, and it can build some content, and it can put this content onto the value it sends back to Cortana. And then Cortana, and then you give it some message to some text to display and some text to speak, and you send the response back. So your background task is communicating with Cortana. You're using Cortana as the UI for some functionality of your app, which again allows this kind of, for short things, this is really time-saving and convenient and interesting for people. Okay. Now, lost my ticket, there we go. Another interesting thing about is also touch is one of the oldest of natural human interface things. You know, we're used to kind of moving things around and pushing it, or children are particularly. And when children first meet a computer, and the natural is to take that nice shiny object and move it over there, and it doesn't work. Or if they have seen a touch screen computer and they've moved stuff around, and then they'll go up to the telly and try and do the same, and then they'll say, "Dad, the telly's broken." And because they can't move stuff around in the same way. So having touch as a user input is actually obviously a natural thing. Now, I'm going to announce this amazing new feature. We've got a new WP called drag and drop. Yeah, I know. We had it since like Windows 3.1 or something. We didn't have it in UWP until... Well, we didn't have it in Windows 8. Well, we had limited drag and drop support in lists, but general drag and drop just wasn't there at all. So the reason why we didn't have it was because things tended to be full screen, we didn't. Let's go back to our this to-do app. And the reason why we didn't have it, because, there wasn't really a need for it. But now, these new, with Windows 10, modern apps don't run full screen. They can on a tablet, and they do on phone, of course. But actually, when they're running here, they're running in a window. You know, so this allows you to do interesting things, like we can dock it to the side of the screen. We could go off and go and find ourselves. Let's go and find ourselves something. Where's OneDrive? That OneDrive. Pictures. Here we go. I can drag a photo on here, and it supports, this is from Windows Explorer, onto my UWP app, and it supports drag and drop, and we've added a new item just by dragging a picture onto there. So we've got that support in there. That's me and my heavy metal band, incidentally. We've got all this nice functionality in there. Again, this is really, really easy to implement, this kind of stuff. If I go and show you in main page, .xaml, the main content of this, here, this grid, here's the properties you have to add to support drag and drop. You have allow drop, first of all, allows stuff to be dropped on it. There's some event handlers for drag over, for the actual drop, and for drag leave. And if we just go and have a very quick look at these ones, then you will see... Oh, that's not what I meant to do. Not in Object Browser. Go to definition. Thank you. So the drag over, this is where we showed that drop me now bit of UI. We just made it visible. So that allows, we're saying, yes, this is accepted to drop links to things over on this bit of this bit of UI. And then at the drop, this is where we basically get the file that's been passed to us. If it's an image file, then we add it and process it and make use of it in our app. So nice bit of simple functionality. And if you drag over this area and leave it, then we hide that prompt as well. So it's really, really simple to add this kind of support into your apps, which we didn't have before, with really great support for that. So there's a couple more, and we're sort of just about coming out of time now here. So the other one is about inking as well, you can actually... I haven't got a... This isn't a touch screen, but, you can actually write on the screen.
We
Oh, thank you. Oh, I pressed the wrong button. Not that one. That one. And you know, we can actually you can actually, drawing is of course the most obvious one, and the To-Do app as well supports ink input as well. So I'll very quickly show you that. Mike showed you how to implement this, so I'm not going to dive into the code. But if we run up our app again. It's really easy to add some written notes to one of these guys. So here we go. We're also with a beer, and then we can do stuff. You know, right? I'm not using a pen here. I'm using a mouse. But with a pen, it's really great. And the recognition is really simple. We can recognize that. It says yes. I got that as oh yes. So you can easily store that as text. You can change the to calligraphy. You know, you can draw some nice, interesting stuff. And we've really invested heavily in Windows 10 to make sure that ink input is all that lag that kind of made it an uncomfortable experience in the past. All that has gone away. So it's with the modern hardware, it's a really, really great experience. And the lastly, just thing, I haven't got a demo for this, but also we're using things like face recognition. So there's lots of interesting things happening around. I'm sure you've seen the demos of how old am I and this sort of thing. With the power of the cloud as well to do some more detailed analysis, with client devices running Windows 10, you can capture face images, you can do analysis in the cloud and do really interesting things for face recognition. And we're doing it as well with Windows Hello. So we've now, with modern RealSense cameras, you can log on just by looking at by putting your face in front of the screen. So our goal is to get rid of passwords altogether and have biometrics and other techniques for authentication. So that is that's my take on the Universal Windows Platform Decoded. I'm Andy Wigley. Please contact me with anything. Thanks very much for coming, and I hope you'll all enjoy the last session of Future Decoded. Thanks very much.